This is Free Talk Live, hour number two. We're kicking it off Wednesday edition. It's Ian here with you.
And Mark.
Toll free number for you to take control of the airwaves is 800-259-9231. Again, that's 1-800-259-9231. You can join us on our website at freetalklive.com. Everything on the site is totally free. Once again, that is freetalklive.com. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by the Free State Project. It's your only choice for more personal freedom and smaller, less intrusive government. To learn more about joining the Second American Revolution, go to freestateproject.org. Again, that's freestateproject.org. Well, in hour number one, we told you a little bit about James J. Hill. James J. Hill was one of these so-called robber barons. Now, he's been mislabeled. In fact, robber barons is really just a term that the socialist history writers have used to label bunch of capitalists that existed in the early part of the 20th century, late part of the 19th century.
And quite a few people that profited off of government grants, too.
Well, in that case, that would be a little more accurate. In that case, in the case of people getting government subsidies and that sort of thing. And actually, that's what this story is all about. This James J. Hill was a railroad guy, and he built the Great Northern Railroad, which was the only successful, profitable railroad of all time, apparently, in United States history. It's the only one, apparently, that didn't go bankrupt, I guess. And this article at Mises.org is comparing Hill to the other railroad guys around who are all taking government money. They were all taking a subsidy, a handout, on a per-mile basis. So the faster they built the track, the cheaper they built the track, the better for them, because
sure,
they were just after the subsidies.
The more money they made, because if you spent all the money that you were going to make on building track, then you don't get to keep any when you get the check-in from the government.
And the article pointed out last hour, that Mr. Hill, when he was building his railroads, was helping the communities around them, around the tracks, not just by providing a railroad in their vicinity, but also literally giving them things like grain and seed and places to store their harvests, and helping them with farming techniques. I mean, all kinds of things he did. Donating land to the towns for parks and churches and schools. I mean, this guy was a real stand-up dude.
Yeah, I mean, he was really doing a lot for the communities, because he realized that if he did a lot for the communities, then the communities would be more profitable and therefore move more stuff on his trains. And they'd be more loyal to him and less likely to use his competition.
Now to continue the story of James Hill versus the real robber barons. By the summer of 1861, after the Battle of First Manassas, it was apparent to all that the war between the states was going to be a long, drawn-out campaign. Nevertheless, in 1862, Congress, with the Southern Democrats gone, diverted millions of dollars from the war effort to begin building another subsidized railroad. The Pacific Railroad Act of 1862 created the Union Pacific and the Central Pacific Railroads, the latter to commence building in Sacramento, California, and the former in Omaha, Nebraska. For each mile of track built, Congress gave these companies a section of land, most of which would be sold, as well as a sizable loan, $16,000. Now, $16,000 in 1862, that's a huge amount of money.
That's a lot of jack. I mean, people were working for like five bucks a month. Yeah.
$16,000 per mile, Mark. Per mile. For the track built on flat prairie land, $32,000 for hilly terrain, and $48,000 per mile in the mountains.
Guess where I'm building?
In the mountains. Doesn't sound like it's too safe to build in the mountains either, by the way these guys were building the tracks.
Hey, the robber barons weren't out in the mountains, just the Irish workers.
As was the case with Jay Cook's Northern Pacific, the railroads tried to build as quickly as possible and as cheaply as possible in order to take advantage of the governmental largesse. Where James J. Hill would be obsessed with finding the shortest route for his railroad, these government-subsidized companies, knowing they were paid by the mile, quote, sometimes built winding, circuitous roads to collect for more mileage, said the historian. Union Pacific Vice President Thomas Durant stressed speed, not workmanship, which meant that he and his chief engineer, former Union Army General Grenville Dodge, often used whatever kind of wood was available for railroad ties, including fragile cottonwood. This, of course, is in stark contrast to James J. Hill's insistence on using only the best quality materials, even if they were more expensive. Durant paid so many lumberjacks to cut trees for rails that farmers were forced to use rifles to defend their land from the subsidized railroad builders. Not for him was the Hill motto, quote, "We have got to prosper with you, or we've got to be poor with you," Folsom continues. Since Dodge was in a hurry, this is the government guy.
Right.
He laid track on the ice and snow. Naturally, the land
sound like a good idea.
The line had to be rebuilt when the springtime came.
Wow.
What was worse, unanticipated spring flooding along the lower fork of the Platte River washed out rails, bridges, and telephone poles, doing at least $50,000 of damage in the first year. No wonder some observers estimated the actual building cost at almost three times as what it should have been. In 1869, after 7 years of construction, the two subsidized railroads managed to meet up at Promontory Point in Utah. Amidst much hoopla and celebration. What's often not mentioned, however, is that the big celebration afterwards, both of the lines had to be rebuilt and even relocated in places, a task that actually took 5 more years. Yay, it's done! It's done! Okay, let's finish it now. The wasteful costs of construction were astounding. The subsidized railroads routinely used more gunpowder, blasting their way through mountains and forests on a single day than was used during the entire Battle of Gettysburg. With so much tax money floating around, the executives of the CP and UP stole funds from their own companies in order to profit personally, something that would have been irrational for James J. Hill and any other private market entrepreneur to do. For example, the UP managers created their own coal mining company, mining coal for $2 per ton, and then selling it to themselves for $6 per ton.
Profitable.
Pocketing the profits. This crooked scam was repeated in dozens of instances and would be exposed as the Crédit Mobilier scandal. Now, how is it they could afford to buy their own products like that? Well, they were getting government handouts.
Yeah, government handouts.
If it wasn't for the government handouts, that would be fiscally impossible.
Well, you would still do it. You could still do it for the purpose of write-offs.
With virtually everything riding on political I don't think they had write-offs back then.
Probably, no, they didn't have an income tax.
With virtually everything riding on political connections as opposed to creating the best quality railroad for consumers, the UP and CP executives naturally spent an inordinate amount of time on politics, as opposed to managing their business. While James J. Hill detested politicians and politics and paid little attention to them, things were very different with the Union Pacific. Folsom explains, in 1866, Thomas Durant, one of the guys in charge of the UP, wined and dined, quote, prominent citizens, including senators, an ambassador, and government bureaucrats, along a completed section of the railroad. He hired an orchestra, a caterer, 6 cooks, and a magician, as well as a photographer. For those with ecumenical palates, he served Chinese duck and Roman goose. The more adventurous were offered roast oxen, antelope. All could have expensive wine and for dessert strawberries, peaches, and cherries. After dinner, some of the men hunted buffalo from their coaches. Durant hoped that all would go back to Washington, inclined to repay the Union Pacific for its hospitality. Isn't that interesting? The Union Pacific was getting government money, and they took the government money, not only spent it on themselves and just bought their own stuff and made themselves fabulously rich and built a bunch of crappy railroads, but they also used that very same government money to wine and dine the very same government bureaucrats and senators that gave them the government money in the first place in order to encourage them to give them more government money. It's a sick process, this subsidy process, and it does absolutely nothing for mankind. It does nothing to make our lives better. It only serves to enrich the political class and those who are connected with them. In addition, you said...
That's how politics works, unfortunately. When you give people the ability to tax and then to spend that tax money, this is the kind of thing that results.
In addition, free railroad passes and Crédit Mobilier stock were routinely handed out to members of Congress and state legislators. And General William Sherman was sold land near Omaha, Nebraska for $2.50 an acre... when the going rate was $8. Congress responded that the 1874 scandal by enacting a blizzard of regulations on the UP and CP that would in the future make it impossible for them to operate with any semblance of efficiency. Because of the regulations, managers couldn't make quick decisions regarding leasing, borrowing money, building extensions of the rail lines, or any other day-to-day business decision. Each such decision literally required an act of Congress. No wonder the railroads died off. 800-259-9231.
They've been in bed forever.
You can take control of the airwaves. There's a little bit more to the story of James J. Hill, the so-called robber baron. We'll share it with you and your calls as well about whatever's on your mind. It is your show. It's Free Talk Live. So take control of the airwaves.
He's kind of like a love child between Ann Coulter and Michael Moore.
I keep hearing all about this obesity epidemic. So what? That's between people, their doctor, and their dinner plate. So why does government get involved? I'll tell you why. Changing your lifestyle is how they think they're going to afford socialized medicine. That's why. Put down that steak, you selfish pig. You're cheating poor folks out of their vaccinations.
Common Sense with Dan Carlin. Get the MP3 or podcast at iTunes or go to dancarlin.com.
What's the worst thing about listening to the radio? The commercial breaks are too long. Now, for just $3 a month, you can help Free Talk Live reduce the amount of time we spend playing commercials and get some really cool bonuses. Your contribution will help us get the show on more radio stations and MP3 players. For pennies per day, you'll help spread the message of liberty around the world. For more information, visit amp.freetalklive.com. Consider becoming a Free Talk Live amplifier today for just $3 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson, here for the 2007 Red Book. The commodity markets like gold, silver, copper, aluminum, and oil have exploded over the last year. This is a glaring testimonial of how quickly the U.S. dollar can be devalued. Many have turned to precious metals to provide a safe haven while increasing the potential profits. Though accumulating precious metals has been a proven method for the storage of wealth, it is important that you understand the market you are getting into. Midas Resources is offering the Red Book and Silver Dollar for only $27.95. The Red Book is the number one best-selling guide to gold and silver coins. Call for your copy today. It's 800-686-2237. If you've already accumulated or plan to get into the precious metals market, you simply must have the Red Book in your library. Call 800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Improve your home's comfort and beauty. Custom replacement windows from Sears are low maintenance and may also help reduce your energy costs. Call 1-800-393-8378 for a free in-home consultation and save $375 on select styles. Offer ends 9/30/06. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License number available upon request, not available in all areas. Improving your home has never been easier. Call Sears at 1-800-393-8378. Update your kitchen with custom cabinet refacing from Sears. Your kitchen can look like new in about 4 to 6 days without the cost or mess of totally remodeling. Call 1-800-300-8069 for a free design consultation. Call and save $500 on select styles. Offer ends 9/30/06. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License number available upon request, not available in all areas. Call Sears now, 1-800-300-8069.
Hey folks, Alex Jones here with an important question. When was the last time you used Pure Soap? I mean the hard-to-find kind that's all natural and not full of corrosive toxins and chemicals and detergents that just dry out your skin and have been connected to very serious health problems. Let me tell you something about the Calbin Pure Soap Company. There's 100% unconditional guarantee on all their wonderful products. They're all natural, they're triple concentrated, they're factory direct, factory owned, and operated since 1947. Earth-friendly Pure soaps for bathing, laundry, and kitchen. Try Pure Soap once and I'll guarantee you'll never use anything else. Now for the first time, Calbin Pure Soap is available factory direct to you and your family. Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Call today for a Calbin Soap catalog at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091 or on the web at calbinpuresoap.com.
You're listening to Free Talk Live. Call toll-free 1-800-259-9231. That's 800-259-9231 and log on at freetalklive.com.
This is Free Talk Live, and it's your show. You take control of the airwaves. Toll-free number for you, 800-259-9231. Again, 1-800-259-9231. And you need to know that Free Talk Live is brought to you by the Free State Project. It is your only choice for more personal freedom and smaller, less intrusive government. Sign the first 1,000 pledge today at freestateproject.org. Again, freestateproject.org. And don't forget to visit freetalklive.com where we got archives, an entire year's worth of the show right there on the front page for free at freetalklive.com. Talking about James J. Hill, he is allegedly a robber baron. The history books would have lumped him in there amongst the other robber barons, which I haven't taken the time to look into them all, but I have a sneaking suspicion that a number of them were being a little misreported on. The history has been a little bit revisionist when it comes to these individuals. A lot of them, turns out, are just guys that were running a business. And in many cases, these businesses were helping a lot of people. They were making money based on the fact that people were satisfied. Customers were being given what they wanted.
Well,
how they got rich.
There's a lot of history of things called, peonism and that kind of thing, where they take workers out into the middle of nowhere and they have them doing work and then they sell to them via the company store and that kind of thing. But, you know, when you're talking about people that are that destitute, that poor,
mm-hmm.
when you offer them things, these sorts of situations and they take them, well, their lives are better.
Well, this guy gave immigrants $10 to come to his railroad and start working on farms near his railroad. So he wasn't actually forcing them to come in and buy stuff from his company store or anything like that. He gave them a real incentive to come and make a living near his railroad. I mean, this guy was doing, at least the way this article was written, and I don't know what the whole story is, but this is more than I've ever learned in high school, that's for sure. According to this guy was a hell of a guy.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying that Mr. Hill was involved in that. I'm just talking about some of the history of
some of the things that
peonism and that sort of thing, yeah.
Well, just to continue and finish up his story here, we're talking about, again, James J. Hill, railroad man. He continued to show how effective that market entrepreneurs could be. In fact, by the way, just to recap here, there was a point at which there was a Union Pacific and the Central Pacific, which were government-subsidized rail lines. The guys that were behind these companies were getting paid thousands of dollars per mile of track. And this was back in the 1800s when $1,000 meant something.
$16,000.
Yeah. They were getting paid, and that was for a flat track, $16,000
right.
per mile. Anyway, as it turns out, as is typical with government subsidies and government sweetheart deals, if you want to get involved with the government and have them pay you a subsidy or whatever it is your little deal with them is, and you think it's just fine and dandy, just you wait, because it's only a matter of time before the tables turn. It's only a matter of time before your competitors get in charge of the government, or somebody you don't like gets in charge of the government, or somebody who doesn't like you gets in charge of the government program that up until that point was making you fabulously wealthy. Well, same thing that happened here with the Union Pacific and the Central Pacific. Things were going great for them for a while until Congress responded to the Credit Mobilier scandal by enacting a blizzard of regulations that pretty much shut down everything these guys were doing. Anything that they wanted to do, any change that they wanted to make, had to essentially go through Congress. As a result, political interference also meant that separate rail lines, according to Mises.org, were required to be built to serve communities represented by influential members of Congress, even if those lines were uneconomical. No business could possibly survive and earn a profit under such a scenario. Essentially, these Congress people were demanding that these railroads who are receiving the subsidies, so because you're getting a subsidy means you need to build down to my little house. You need to come down here to my town out in the middle of nowhere. There's no farms around for you to actually get business from. There's nobody in this town that actually wants to use your railroad to haul products. I just want to ride your railroad because I am a congressperson. It's not economically feasible to provide that sort of a service. And so that's one of the factors that went into the fact that these guys went out of business. In fact, the UP went bankrupt in 1893. The Great Northern, on the other hand, which was James J. Hill's railroad, his private railroad that he built on his own, the Great Northern was still going strong at that time. Not having accepted any government subsidies, James J. Hill was free to build and operate his railroad in a way that he deemed was most efficient and most profitable.
You know, I'm kind of interested in that because there are many people that run businesses that have nothing to do with getting any government funding, but they're still burdened with all kinds of government regulations.
Oh, yeah, that's because we're in the 2000s now.
Okay.
They just didn't have those regulations back then, and I don't think James J. Hill would have stood for it. Back then, at least the way this article's written, talking about this guy, how he hated politicians and hated politics. This was the kind of man who, if the government came to him and said, well, they're going to regulate your railroad now, and you can just stop building. Or whatever it was the regulation is they wanted to slap on him, he'd tell them to go flip off. That's just the kind of attitude that I get from this guy.
Well, I'm sure that Spooner did the same thing, but they essentially ran him out of business.
Yeah, that much is true. Hill continued to show how effective a market entrepreneurs could be. Having completed Great Northern, he got into the steamship business. wasn't good enough. The railroad, he'd had enough with railroads, getting into the steamship business in order to facilitate American exports to the Orient. As usual, he succeeded, increasing American exports to Japan sevenfold from 1896 to 1905. He continued to reduce his rail rates in order to make American profit or exports profitable. Being an ardent free trader, Hill was a Democrat for most of his life. Because the Republican Party, since the time of Lincoln, had been the main political force behind high protectionist tariffs, he later switched parties in his later life when the Democratic Party abandoned its laissez-faire roots and became interventionist. But he considered the Republican Party to be merely the lesser of two evils. Recognizing a market in which the American Midwest for timber in the Northeast, Hill convinced his next-door neighbor, Frederick Weyerhaeuser. You recognize that name?
No, but he sounds rich.
I recognized it. Weyerhaeuser's still in business. They're one of the major timber manufacturers in the United States
today.
And it was the next-door neighbor of this guy. And he convinced him to get into the timber business with him. He cut the freight charges from 90 to 40 cents per 100 pounds. And he and Weyerhaeuser prospered by selling Northwest timber to other parts of the country. Despite the quality services and reduced costs that Hill brought to Americans, he'd be unfairly lumped in with political entrepreneurs who were fleecing the taxpayers and consumers. The public eventually began complaining of the monopoly pricing and corruption that were inherent features of the government-created and subsidized railroads. The federal government responded to the complaints with the Interstate Commerce Act of 1887, which was supposed to ban rail rate discrimination, and later with the Hepburn Act of 1906, which made it illegal to charge different rates to different customers. What these two federal laws did was to outlaw Hill's price cutting by forcing railroads to charge everyone the same high rate. So the regulation did finally come into the picture, Mark, and as a result, this was all done in the name of consumer protection, giving it an Orwellian aura. The new round of government regulation benefited the government-subsidized railroads at Hill's expense, because Hill was the most vigorous price cutter.
Right, he couldn't compete.
Exactly.
By cutting prices, at least.
His trade to the Orient was severely damaged, since he could no longer legally offer discounts on exports in order to induce American exporters to join with him in entering foreign markets. He eventually got out of the steamship business altogether, and as a result, untold opportunities to export American products abroad were lost forever. The Interstate Commerce Commission soon created a bureaucratic monstrosity that attempted to micromanage all aspects of the railroad business, hampering its efficiency even further. 1-800-259-9231, a sad ending to what was a hell of a story for James J. Hill.
Well, I'm sure he made a bundle in the process.
I'm sure he did. 800-259-9231. You can take control of the airwaves as usual, government raining on everybody's parade and ruining it for everyone. This is your show. It's Free Talk Live.
Hello, this is Amy Bjorklund. Thanks to a quantum leap in garlic research, the health benefits of 20 fresh garlic cloves are now available in one tiny capsule. With stabilized allicin, the proven power of garlic has been transformed into what is perhaps the most important medicinal product ever developed. And there's no odor. Stabilized allicin gives you and your family a safe, natural weapon that kills harmful bacteria, viruses, and funguses, all without harming the friendly bacteria in the digestive tract. This means strong immunity, fewer and shorter colds, and the best possible protection from deadly diseases, none of which prescription drugs can offer. What's more, this product can deter mosquitoes from biting you and safely keep fleas and ticks off your pets. Visit truthandexcellence.com, click the Truth and Excellence banner on GCNlive.com, or call me, Amy Bjorklund, personally at 805-595-2711. 805-595-2711.
Hey, want to know a natural healing treatment that's been around for thousands of years? Salt products. Now Soleil Wellness brings these natural healing products to your home. Easy to use, non-toxic, and 100% natural, these products help to give you great physical, mental, and spiritual results. Heated salt pills for earaches and back pain, salt pipes to relieve respiratory ailments, bath salts release toxins as they soften and rehydrate the skin. Pretty salt lamps to ionize the air and reduce EMF radiation. So many different salt products available for you. It's time to let the secret out. Visit Soleil Wellness at natural-salt-lamps.com. That's natural-salt-lamps.com. Or call 312-224-2710. That's 312-224-2710. Mention GCN Live for a free gift.
If you're tired of spending a small fortune every time you fill up, now you can do something about it. Ethos FR, a product used all over the world, has reported savings of up to 19% on gas and even reduced emissions of up to 30%. Ethos FR is easy to use and works with any kind of fuel, including gasoline, diesel, and ethanol. Ethos FR works by reformulating the gas in your tank to burn more completely, resulting in a cleaner engine, better mileage, more power, and fewer emissions. So visit ctsafegas.com and start saving today. That's ctsafegas.com.
Are your Federal Reserve notes looking for a safe haven? Mine found it in precious metals. Not paper promises, but actual gold in my possession. It is liquid, it is private, it owes no one, it cannot go bankrupt, and it maintains its purchasing power. Find your answer at Midas Resources. That's 1-800-686-2237. The answer is at 1-800-686-2237.
We understand that decisions related to health can be overwhelming. That is why at ResearchedHerbs.com we take pride in offering you herbs whose safety and effectiveness have been proven time and time again. For example, did you know that Live 52, the top-selling natural herbal supplement for liver diseases since 1930, is backed by over 300 research studies and clinical trials and prescribed by more than 200,000 health professionals worldwide? In fact, the effectiveness of all the herbs featured on ResearchedHerbs.com, including those for cholesterol, blood pressure, diabetes, arthritis, cirrhosis, and hepatitis, among others, is extremely well documented. Our website, ResearchedHerbs.com, was created to empower you with the information and answers you need to make the right health decisions. Researched and proven herbs at great prices. Visit us online at ResearchedHerbs.com or call 1-800-845-3841 for more information. That's 1-800-845-3841. Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
This is Free Talk Live. It is your show. You can take control of the airwaves. Toll free number 800-259-9231. Again, that's 1-800-259-9231. Bring up whatever's on your mind. You can also join us on our website at freetalklive.com. The Shrine of Female Listeners is there. Visit it at shrine.freetalklive.com.
What does a person who's been called aggressively nonpartisan sound like? A lot like a libertarian, sometimes. Check out Common Sense with Dan Carlin and see why he thought the Free Talk Live audience would respond to his ad. Get the podcast at iTunes or go to dancarlin.com. That's dancarlin.com.
As we go to the phones and to the fun, Brent in Kansas City, you're on Free Talk Live with Ian and Mark. Hello, Brent.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, I unfortunately missed listening last night, and you were talking about one of my favorite topics, which is intellectual property.
All right.
So I guess I may go backwards here a little bit for you all, but I'd like to offer a case for intellectual property not really being something that exists.
Okay, great.
Well, first of all, I mean, let's start with the obvious. You know, intellectual property is an idea that only goes back maybe 150 years. You know, before that, like, the idea that that something that was as intangible as, you know, an idea or a song or something couldn't be, you know, something that you would make profit off of, just the idea. You would have to, for instance, you know, Bach, the way Bach made money was every week he got paid by a church to write pieces for that week's church service.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote pieces every week. He kept producing things.
Do you think we have more, less, or just as many musicians per capita now as we did in Bach's time?
I think we probably have about the same, but I see there is a difference in that, you know, the idea that you can write a song and then make money off of it until the copyright runs out or until you die or whatever, well, actually it's after you die, you know, means that you only have to write one song and then make money off of that rather than...
Yeah, it's going to have to be a really, really popular song for you to just live off of one song.
Well, you know, that's true, but I mean, I don't think that the idea of intellectual property necessarily encourages innovation, particularly with things like music and... you know, things like music and art and things
like
that.
No, it doesn't. In fact, as and I want you to get back to your example, but to just expound on that, as Gardner Goldsmith pointed out, when we had him on the show a couple weeks ago, the Beastie Boys album, I don't remember which one it was, but it was early 80s or something like that when it came out, apparently an album like that could not be done today, because after the Beastie Boys album came out, they changed the copyright law as far as what sort of samples you can use in your music without asking permission and that sort of thing. And because they could use those samples without going and begging for permission or paying people off in order to use them, they were able to create a really original album that now is essentially illegal to do.
Well, I think that you probably have a lot of people that are currently writing books that wouldn't be writing books if the intellectual property laws weren't in place. They see an opportunity to create another form, another stream of income coming in for themselves. What you're doing is you're prescribing fewer books, fewer songs.
Well, I think that actually, for instance, I think John Steinbeck, you know, ideas like that. He wrote books because he had ideas that he thought were important that he wanted to share with the world. John Grisham, different story.
Well,
you know, I think maybe
you have to admit that people like to read John Grisham stuff.
Well, yeah, if people like to read John Grisham stuff, then why wouldn't he write books without these silly laws being
because
around?
Any publishing house can just steal his work and print it.
Oh, not if there are reciprocal agreements between these publishers and the retailers.
Well, what if the a publisher just pops up and decides I'm not going to deal with any of that stuff? I'm going to just publish whatever I want.
I don't know, Brent. Do you have a response there?
Well, I mean, yeah. If there was no such thing as intellectual property, the way you would make money would be to, you know, basically you would have to get some way to be commissioned for writing things. For, you know, like I was saying, the way every composer until, say, you know, basically 1890 around in there somewhere, every single composer, the way they made money was they kept writing new songs for concerts. You would write a song on commission, somebody would pay you $800, you'd give them the score, and they'd perform it in concert. That would be the end of that song for you. Like, that would be the end of the money for you. You know? That's how...
Sounds like you're going to draw a lot of really really talented composers to the business that way.
What do you mean?
I mean that what you're doing is you're lessening your pool of talent by not offering as much money.
I'm not sure that you're lessening your pool of talent as much as you're, you know, maybe some people would write more songs. You know, maybe you're lessening your pool of talent, but I think you would have a smaller, more dedicated pool that would write a lot more material.
Wouldn't you have more talented individuals because they've been writing more material? They've had more of a chance to practice and get better?
I've heard a lot of people that are passionate about music that are just not that good.
That's very true. I've heard a lot of
people that are that have recording contracts that just aren't that good.
I'd have to agree, but
so why is it so bad if we have less of them?
Look, there's a lot of good stuff that gets produced. You would have to say that.
And there's
the
a lot of great stuff that also doesn't ever see the light of a recording contract. There's a lot of bands out there that are struggling to get their music out there, and they've been most successful, actually. A lot of these bands have been most successful in avoiding these record companies and marketing themselves directly on the internet, giving away a lot of their music.
I'm not saying that our intellectual property laws and our copyright laws are perfect when it comes regarding music.
You are saying you do support the idea of smashing people's fingers and locking them in jail cells if they play the same series of notes in the same order as someone else did.
No, only if they make money off of it.
Brent, any final thoughts?
Well, I was going to move into more tangible things such as patents and whatnot. I think that your idea that innovation wouldn't happen if there weren't some way to, you know, patent your ideas. I mean, obviously, the vast majority of your day-to-day items that you use every single day were invented in some form long, long before patents existed. You know, chairs.
How about penicillin? Penicillin was created by a company for the sole purpose of being able to patent it. I mean, how many people would you like to see die every year without penicillin? I mean, I think they would have invented penicillin, but, you know, they invented it so that they could have the patent and make money.
If there were no patents on, you seem to be pretty stringent on this drugs idea of no innovation. Well, I mean, if you make something and anybody else can make it as soon as it hits the market, you're going to have a lot more incentive to keep moving, to keep making better and better and better drugs, figure out cheaper and cheaper and cheaper ways to make them, keep making
them
higher quality.
But Mark is suggesting that they wouldn't bother, that they would just say screw it.
If people want the drugs, it will bother because people will be looking for the cheapest, best name.
I agree with you. If there's a demand, someone will. I agree. If there's a demand, some greedy capitalist will fill
it. Yeah, just try to squeeze those pennies out of there.
Thanks for the call, man. We appreciate hearing from you. 800-259-9231.
There's a lot of research and development that goes into new drugs, and I just don't see that the companies would find the profit motive there. Perhaps they'd continue to produce drugs, but they're not going to work as hard on R&D.
Well, maybe they wouldn't be the ones doing the R&D. Maybe other people would do the R&D.
I just wonder how many people you're willing to kill for this simple little plan of intellectual property doesn't exist.
It doesn't. It's a violent group of thugs enforcing their way on others. Let's talk to Johnson in Florida. You're on Free Talk Live with Ian and Mark.
And the people that are saved by it can just die, huh?
Nobody's been saved by intellectual property laws. Just a bunch of people's fake livelihoods have been protected.
That's right. Companies don't do, you know.
Johnson, in Florida, you're on Free Talk Live. Hello.
So I wanted to bring up something. You said that, I got the chance to speak with you a little bit off air, Mark, and you said that you're going off of my idea of how things go and your approach with intellectual property. And I don't think that you are, because you're making the assumption that the drive and to create is only ever motivated by profit, which is incorrect. And
the drive to create for corporations, and right now, currently, companies supply the best drugs for us.
And I'd like to clarify, you know, as far as, you know, I mentioned my ideas, whatever, as far as, you know, the what I think of intellectual property, you know. In other words, for example, I always like to use the idea of a chair. If you see a chair in a store window, you break into the store, you take that chair, that's theft. If you see a chair in a store window and you look at the chair and you examine the chair in the store window and then you go out and you buy the wood and you go home and you make the chair for yourself, that's not theft.
That is not theft. I want to bring it back. Hang on, Johnson. 800-259-9231, and the fact that you could consider that theft, Mark, is just baffling to me. You can take control of the airwaves. It is your show.
I don't think chairs are patented.
800-259-9231. This is Free Talk Live.
This is Jack Blood with the Genesis Radio Network. I have an urgent message for all of our listeners. The mass media keeps telling us that we are the richest, most powerful economy in the world, quote unquote. If this is true, why can't we pay our bills? Why is the United States the world's largest debtor nation? The truth is that we are in the worst debt bubble in our nation's history. When the bubble bursts, will you be able to feed your family? When the inevitable crash occurs, will you be ready? Call Whitehurst International at 1-888-892-6238. That's 1-888-892-6238 for the following two free reports. U.S. debt bubble, red alert, and real estate crash. Call 888-8-XANADU, that's 888-8-XANADU, and ask for George.
DVD, books, music, instruments, periodicals, computers, software, electronics, photo, cell phone, office products, home and garden, bed and bath, furniture, kitchen, pet supply, automotive, hardware, apparel, shoes, jewelry, grocery, healthcare, sports and outdoors, toys, games, used and more. It's a department store at your fingertips. Amazon.freetalklive.com. Get all your shopping done, a great deal, delivery to your door, and a percentage of your purchase will go to Free Talk Live when you enter Amazon through Amazon.freetalklive.com.
Do you feel like you should be free to live your life however you want, so long as your actions don't harm anyone else? There's good news. You are not alone. Thousands of people like you are going to move to New Hampshire so we can reclaim our lost liberties. Be part of the Second American Revolution. Join the Free State Project. You can learn more at freestateproject.org or call toll-free 1-888-532-4604. That's 1-888-532-4604 or visit freestateproject.org.
What's better than a tiny tiger in your tank? A tornado under your hood. A tornado is an easy-to-install, maintenance-free air twister designed to increase gas mileage. I personally commissioned independent tests to verify results in 6 vehicles, and all of them gained MPG with tornado. With today's gas prices, it makes sense to cage the gas-saving power of a tornado. Visit tornadoair.com or pick up your tornado at Checker, Shucks, and Cragen today.
In today's world of discord and disappointment, One thing's for sure. Car cover owners are so satisfied, they buy their car covers all over again. Think car covers are a hassle? No. Research shows owners find covers easy to put on and take off. Are all covers the same? No. The standard in car cover fabric is Block It by Kimberly Clark. Don't let sun and dust damage your car. Kimberly Clark's Block It fabric's got you covered. That's Block It by Kimberly Clark.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonance. If the resonant frequency force making the glass vibrate is big enough, the size of the vibration will become so large that the glass shatters. Using a similar principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Simple step-by-step instructions using pictures are easy to follow. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. 1-866-885-6625.
This is Free Talk Live. Call toll-free 1-800-259-9231. That's 800-259-9231. And get interactive at freetalklive.com.
This is Free Talk Live. Toll-free number 800-259-9231. You take control. Bring up anything. It's Ian here with you.
And Mark.
1-800-259-9231. You can join us on our website at freetalklive.com. If you like the fact that we give everything away at freetalklive.com, then you should shop with us at Amazon. Amazon.freetalklive.com is where you want to go. Because if you enter Amazon through that link, that's amazon.freetalklive.com, then anything that you buy in their 35 categories of products, anything you buy will get a percentage of. So whether it be a brand new DVD, book, even used items, we'll get percentage on the used items as well. Whether it be baby stuff, office supplies, furniture, you name it, we'll get a percentage if you enter through Amazon.freetalklive.com. Not to mention the fact that the prices are great, the shipping deals are excellent, and more. Amazon.freetalklive.com. Let's go back to Johnson in Florida. You're back on Free Talk Live with Ian and Mark.
All right, let me just to recap real quick. Again, I had said, you know, if you see a chair in a store in a window and you break into that store to take that chair, that's theft.
We all agree that's theft, and that's bad.
It's obviously theft. If you look at a chair in a store window, you admire that chair, you think it's absolutely, one of the greatest things you've ever seen, you know, you study it, maybe you stop by the store every day, and you at home, you have your wood shop, you get some equipment because you like the chair, and you build your own chair, and, you know, you make a replica, but you make that replica just for yourself. That's not theft. However, if you were to take and then start making mass producing that chair and selling that chair, then you get into the area where you can debate that that's theft, because then you're possibly selling money or stealing money from the original creator of that chair.
But you're not stealing money from the original creator of the chair, because that creator of the chair doesn't own the money that's out there in the marketplace. You're the one taking the time and effort to manufacture chairs to sell, and therefore you deserve to be able to reap the profit.
I disagree, because you're diluting the originality of his product, because that was originally their idea. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to agree with you on that. Because
how long does it get
fair.
To be their idea?
You're stealing someone else's innovation.
Well, wait a minute. How long does it get to be their idea? Forever? 10 years? 20 years? And who decides?
I suggest that it's at least as long as they're actively trying to profit from that idea.
That's longer in some cases than many products.
As long as that individual, the individual who created the idea and can legally be proven to have created that idea,
so
that
you don't support
generic
drugs.
Actively trying to, I wouldn't say that right ever passes on to anyone, but the specific individual who created that idea.
I disagree with that. So then you don't support generic drugs then, because if this was your world then, Johnson, then anybody who created a pharmaceutical would never have that be able to be copied by generic drug companies.
Why? Because you think that, for example, Mark's idea of penicillin being created by a corporation is truth? It's not. Penicillin was actually created by a guy.
No. What I'm saying is whoever, Louis Pasteur or whoever it was that created penicillin.
It sat on the shelf for 5 years until it was used commercially.
No, Alexander Fleming invented it in 1928 working at St. Mary's Hospital as a complete accident. It actually sat on the shelf before that because it was originally discovered in France. but it was again rediscovered by accident.
So it's
twice.
whoever decides to market it that gets to keep the idea. I don't really understand. Who in the case of penicillin should be the one that gets to reap the rewards forever?
The one who's actively making the attempt to profit from that idea. They can't, if whoever comes up with the idea and then makes the decision to try to profit from it.
So if he who comes up with the idea doesn't actually act and attempt to profit from the idea, and somebody else takes the idea and attempts to profit from it, then the guy who originally came up with it, he gets nothing then.
If they didn't attempt to profit from it, then absolutely not. Why should they?
Okay, but if they attempt to profit from it, then they get to reap the rewards for as long as they continue to attempt to profit from it. What does that continue on to their children and grandchildren as well?
Well, again, you also have the idea. You also have in any given marketplace, and with any of this copyright law, you would have to make the rational distinction of how much, because any idea can be improved upon. Anything can be changed.
Mm-hmm.
So how much change is acceptable? In other words, if you're making an identical copy of someone's idea, I'm sorry, I believe that that's theft, and I believe that any individual should have the right to protect that to a certain extent,
mm-hmm.
as long as it's an individual, as long as it's not a corporation, as long as you're not passing those rights on, and as long as it's, something physical, like money in that case, that can be proved as being stolen. I mean, it's profits that's being stolen. In the case of something where it's like, if we had replicators and you could digitally replicate a chair or replicate in the case of MP3s, nothing physical is actually being stolen there if it's for personal use. It's when it's being sold that the problem comes into play.
I disagree. I really just disagree that the suggestion that the person who comes up with the idea, as long as they continue to market it, that they should be the sole profiteer from that particular idea.
Why shouldn't they? Anyone can make a modification of that idea. You can change the idea.
Well, in the case of generic drugs, there would be no generic drugs if that was the case. And then there would just be one drug for the rest of time, because that company, whoever came up with that idea, would continue to market it forever, and they'd continue to be able to charge whatever it is they want to charge. No one could copy it.
One thing's for sure is the intellectual property laws in this nation are really messed up if we're having this discussion.
You better believe they are, and nobody agrees. All three of us have different ideas as to what is correct and appropriate.
Johnson, with patent laws the way they are currently, you wouldn't be able to create a five-legged chair today when somebody had the patent on a four-legged chair, because they just had the chair patent.
Because, that's the way, part of the way copyright law works now, which is definitely problematic. And the other thing is, for example, you brought up, and I'm again in between both of you, was with the example from the other night, which was a karaoke bar, which I think it was a Led Zeppelin song or something like that was being sung. And Mark, I believe Ian argued that, it's absolutely insane and nothing, is that bartender. And I tend to agree that the karaoke bar owner shouldn't be responsible, but for different reasons, in that I don't think anyone can prove that the intent of the karaoke performance was to profit. In other words, that bar owner didn't open up karaoke in order to say, I hope someone sings a Led Zeppelin song.
No. He did intend to profit. No, he did intend to profit, because if he didn't have karaoke on that night, he might not have had as large of a crowd.
I can tell you, there's a bar that I go to on Wednesday nights that I don't go to any other night of the week. It's because of karaoke.
Johnson, thanks for the call.
No, I'm saying he didn't necessarily intend to profit from that one song.
That may be the case, but ASCAP doesn't care. ASCAP doesn't care about that. As long as one song has been performed, it doesn't matter if they perform one song or another song, they're going to crack down on them.
Well, no, not necessarily. See, Ian, what you need to understand is that there are three different groups that you can license music from. In other words, maybe you're karaoke and you're licensed for BMI and whatever. Is it EMG or some other?
It's RIAA, ASCAP, BMI, as I understand it.
Right. Now, imagine if you're licensed for RIAA and BMI, but you just decided that ASCAP didn't have a big enough library. Which, actually, let me be clear with that. Actually, I'll make it RIAA and ASCAP, because BMI doesn't have a very large library comparatively. So say you're licensed for RIAA and ASCAP, and somehow a BMI song slips in, and you weren't aware of it.
Right.
Well, then that's where your problem comes in, and then you get sued by BMI, but you didn't have the intention to profit off of that BMI song. There was
Doesn't
never intention there. I think that part of the reason, part of the thing has to be is that they're also, and this is again one of those things that's very hard to prove in court, but that there's intention to profit, you know, off of those things.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
What we have going here is a messed up court system, not a messed up intellectual property system when it comes to those groups. There's no way that a jury is going to sit there and award somebody $10,000 per song from some little crappy bar that has a karaoke singing. You know, they might say, oh, yeah, you're right. He should have paid you. Here's your quarter. Haul butt.
Maybe so. Johnson, thank you for the call, man. We appreciate hearing from you. 800-259-9231 is the toll-free number. Well, since we're talking intellectual property, I've got an email that's related here. But I wanted to, and we're going to get to it in hour three, but I wanted to touch on something here, Mark, because you have said on the air before, you have bemoaned the fact that there are people in Washington, D.C. that are, they might be pro-freedom on some issues, but on some other issues, they are absolutely for government interference. And you have very correctly pointed out that it's the aggregate of all of these different individuals, the 400 or whatever drunken sailors that are in Congress. 435 drunken sailors. They all have their favorite government areas, their favorite government programs, and they continue to promote them. And this is essentially what you're doing. Oh, yeah, you're a small government guy when it comes to the areas that you don't really care that much about, but when it comes to intellectual property, you are all for the interference of the gang of government in the world of creation of products and ideas and services. You're
yes, but,
all for it.
But I support it in the area of tort reform. You know, I think that it should be decided by courts, not by politicians.
What should be decided by courts? Whether or not there's been a violation of intellectual property?
Correct.
So there won't be any patents? Will the courts hand out patents?
Well, patents would exist in the sense that they exist in common law.
I don't understand how that is. You'll have to explain it to me.
Like a homestead.
800-259-9231, but what if we homestead at the same time? This is your show. You take control of the airway.
Second?
Hour number three. Well, why should you get it if you're a second ahead of me? Again, we both came up with the same idea across the country from one another by total coincidence. What if it's a week or two off? What's it matter? More
then
on the way.
A jury of your peers may just decide that.
Hour three is coming up. This is your show. Free Talk Live.
DVD, books, music,
instruments,
periodicals,
computers,
software,
electronics,
photos,
cell phones,
office products,
home and garden,
bed and bath,
furniture,
kitchen,
pet supplies,
automotive,
hardware,
apparel,
shoes,
jewelry,
grocery,
healthcare,
sports and outdoors,
toys,
games,
used and more.
It's a department store at your fingertips. Amazon.freetalklive.com. Get all your shopping done, a great deal, delivery to your door, and a percentage of your purchase will go to Free Talk Live when you enter Amazon through Amazon.freetalklive.com.
Hi, Ted Anderson here. I'm happy to announce that the audience has increased over 200% this year, and our advertisers have sent testimonials complimenting the responsiveness. Sponsorship is critical at both local and national levels. If you have a business, product, or message that could benefit from this broadcast locally, call the station you're listening to. For national exposure, call 877-996-4327. Become a part of the Genesis team by calling your local station or call the national line at 877-996-4327.